This is the Arlene Bynum Show on Talk Radio, AM 640.
634, welcome back. Once again, in the headlines, do we have a right to die? If we have a fatal illness, do we have a right to take our own life? And who has a right to say that we don't? More and more, and our heart goes out when this happens, is we have to ask ourselves a question, is why is society able to say to people, you know what, you can't leave when you want to? Euthanasia. It's a very, very, very tough question. But as we debate the right to die, there are people out there who want to say, you know what? What about the right to live? Every time this comes up, and when the Robert Latimer case came up, I did some stories on there are disabled people and how they felt, because whenever the debate is about the quality of somebody's life, if you're somebody who might be perceived as not having optimum quality, do you feel a pressure that your life is not as important? There was a great op-ed piece, an opinion piece here in the National Post, from a guy who has a twin brother who is severely disabled. And his name is Derek Medema, and he says his right to live trumps the right to die. I would like to welcome to the program Derek Medema.
Thanks for having me.
What went through your mind before actually coming out and talking about the right to live trumps the right to die? It's such a difficult conversation, but has it hit a point where you think the pendulum needs to swing back a bit?
Well, the inspiration for this particular article was an earlier letter to the editor where a person mentioned two of her children like my brother and wished they could die, partially because of their quality of life and partially because they were costing a lot of money. And to that I saw I could give a direct rebuttal because of my own family situation and bring that to bear on the debate as a whole.
All right. Tell us about, this is your twin brother?
Yeah, my twin brother. Basically, due to complications at birth, he became disabled, and we're both 39, and he's still in diapers. He's fed through a feeding tube. He doesn't speak. He can't walk, and so he's profoundly handicapped. Probably one of the most profoundly handicapped people you would meet if you saw him on the street.
Is he mentally handicapped?
Yes. As far as doctors could tell, and that's a bit murky, but as far as doctors could tell, he has about a 3-month-old mental capacity.
All right. But you say his right to live trumps people's right to die. What is it about the way he lives and the quality of his life that makes you want to say to people, stop, hang on a minute here?
Well, it's about his quality of life is it can't be judged by his lack, by his inabilities. It can't be judged by his handicaps. I need to also say that he's a wonderful brother. He's a great uncle. He's a teacher to any of those who are willing to learn. But the point of my op-ed is that if we give a choice to Gloria Taylor, who's in BC Supreme Court right now, if we give the choice to her to choose assisted suicide, then we are leading to a time when my brother, when we would face pressure to kill my brother because it's expensive to care for him. And so if we grant the choice to one person to die by assisted suicide, we then, at the very least, begin to pressure many, many more people with disabilities and other vulnerabilities to give them the pressure that they would be better off dead, if only because it would be cheaper.
And as you say in your piece, I mean, this is happening already in other countries, isn't it? I mean, people are being euthanized because somebody else is making a decision about their quality of life.
Exactly. I mentioned in the article a 2010 study of Belgium, euthanasia in Belgium. And in 1 year, about one-third of all euthanasia deaths done by doctors were done without the explicit request of the person killed. So one-third of all people who died by euthanasia died without asking. And what's even more jarring is that when doctors had the chance to explain why they did that, a minority of them said two things. One, because the doctor either decided that euthanasia was the best option for the person, or two, because the doctor felt that the discussion of death would be so stressful for the person that they'd be better off if they killed them instead.
Who should decide? Is there a moment? Have you come to any decisions about that? Is there a situation where we do have a right to decide?
Well, there is the right to decide in particular situations at the end of life. If a person is on a respirator or, you know, through medical intervention, is hooked up to all sorts of tubes in order to survive, they can either say, no more, I want to stop. They can choose at the very beginning of that process, no, I don't want to. Or if they're unable to do that and they have officially designated someone as their decision maker, that person can say, no, it's time to stop this. And in fact, I want to also bring to bear, my father died of ALS, and my father chose not to go onto a respirator. Because he knew that if he went onto a respirator, he would live much longer. He chose not to go onto a respirator and therefore suffocated and died. That was part of his dying process, but he chose not to extend it. So we do have the ability to make choices at the end of life. We just don't have the ability now to make the choice to kill ourselves with somebody else's help.
Can we do both? Can we help those who want the right to die, and also can we help those who believe in the right of life?
Well, I don't think it's possible to craft a law with enough safeguards, and safeguards that would be solid enough to make it safe. The reality of the situation in in the Netherlands, is that they started out with respect to euthanasia, making it legal for people who were 6 months from death with a terminal illness. They've now just euthanized a woman with dementia, who, although she was a lifelong supporter of the Right to Die movement, she was unable, because of advanced dementia, to give consent at the moment of her death. They have made legal and enshrined in law the ability to euthanize babies with severe disabilities with the consent of their parents. They have moved farther and farther down the road of allowing more and more people this option. And what that, you can imagine, the reality is if Gloria Taylor is allowed to have assisted suicide because of ALS, and then anyone with ALS is going
to feel pressured, do you think?
Let me explain how they feel pressured, because I think, I'd like to explain, because I think that can seem wacky to some people. How does one person's decision affect others? But the most recent numbers that I have, and they're not entirely recent, but consider that it might take $120,000 to care for someone with ALS over their lifetime with the disease. In terms of medical interventions, in terms of electric wheelchairs, in terms of modifying your home, etc. A person who gets diagnosed with ALS either has the choice of taking pills that maybe cost a couple hundred dollars, and that's based on how much it costs in Oregon. They can have that choice of either taking these pills that cost a couple hundred dollars, or they can live for 5 to 7 years in constant degradation of their physical well-being and cost $120,000 to their family or to the healthcare system as a whole. Under that situation, whether a person wants to do whichever one a person wants to do, there's a financial pressure that comes into that situation. And that's built in once the option is given to choose assisted suicide. And that applies not just to ALS, but to cancer treatment. It could be kidney dialysis. It could be all sorts of it. Could be.
Then we will make decisions based on money. What did you think of the story of Robert Latimer?
Well, because I'm so close to my brother, I can understand Robert Latimer's frustrations. I've been there as my parents cared for my brother, and my parents actually reached the point where they were no longer able to care for him at home. They put him into a group home in our local community. I understand the frustrations, but I radically disagree. I'm aware also of the fact that Tracy Latimer had her moments of smiling and happiness. It wasn't all, doom and gloom for her, and it wasn't all pain and suffering. And what that decision did, what Robert Latimer's actions did, cast a pall over a large swath of people in the country with disabilities, who realized that if he was able to escape punishment, for lack of a better word, for killing his daughter, that would mean that the option of many other people to assist them to die before they wanted to would become a possibility without that person having to face legal repercussions.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I remember doing stories with disabled people at the time. Derek Medema, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
And thank you for having me.